The Guardian.
Hello?
Is that Miss Lynn Ramsey?
It is.
Lynn, it's Jason here.
Hey, Jason, how are you?
I'm all right. I'm sorry, I've woken you up, haven't I?
Oh, no, don't worry.
Your film sort of played at the LFF as the Time Out Gala the other night.
Yeah.
Which must have been nice. It must be nice for you to actually see a film, you know, playing, because it has been 10 years since any audiences here in the UK have seen your work.
I think it was 9, but I don't know. But anyway.
Well, I wasn't counting very well.
I wasn't, yeah. Well, or 8 or so, I don't know. No, it was really exciting, actually, because it was the UK premiere, you know. It was, we've been to Cannes and Telluride and Toronto, so it's been to America as well. So, yeah, I was... always loved the London Film Festival. I'm kind of sorry to see Sandra go, to be honest.
Yes, as the director as well. But she's been here as long as you haven't.
So yeah.
Would you programme more of your films? Had you made any, Lynn?
Well, I was there years ago. I was at Ratcatcher when the Sunderland.
Yeah.
So it was that was quite special for me, you know, the London Film Festival. But, you know, now with Edinburgh being changed, you know, it's really the most important one here.
Yeah, it is. Well, no, we were delighted to have you back, because you won the Sutherland Award, which is your breakthrough director, first time director, and it's great that wasn't a wasted award. You've clearly sort of developed well. I mean, Kevin is a great achievement. I think I saw it in Cannes, obviously, with you.
Nice to meet you.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I'm still hungover. I'm interested in saying that you've taken it to Telluride and Toronto, American film festivals, and it is a film in which you, a British Scottish director, mm-hmm. making a film about America with quite a British crew, you know, Tilda Swinton, Seamus McGarvey. Uh-huh. So I'm wondering how the audience is now. You've had a chance to show it here in the UK and in Scotland too. Have the Americans responded differently to how the English would see such a story?
Actually, not so much. I mean, it was received pretty... I mean, obviously, the subject matter is rather sensitive, you know, but because I've avoided that a lot, I think people have really received it pretty warm, you know, very warmly, and see that, you know, are kind of strangely see the humour and are entertained by it, you know, or find it a compelling film as well, rather than just get kind of hung up in, the Columbine thing, you know, which is something I didn't really want to go into. I always thought that was kind of Kevin's smokescreen, even though it is, that obviously, especially in the States, that's...
Of course, it's still a hot topic, I suppose.
Yeah, so yeah. But people didn't really receive it that way, and I was really pleased about that.
So that you think that your view of it as a mother-son story or a mother-point of view story, you've obviously got that across successfully.
I think so. You know, I was really pleased. I mean, it was such a warm reception, and Telluride's a really special place for me because it's got kind of spiritual thing about it, and the place it's in is just...
It's high up in the mountains, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been, actually. It's just got something about it. So I've been there before, and last time I was there, it was me and Gaspar Noé. You know, he'd Irreversible, and I had Morven Caller playing, I think, in the same night.
in a happy double bill.
Yes. I think the ladies, the posh ladies in Telluride were rather shocked.
Yeah, because it's a sort of St. Moritz of America, isn't it? I'm sure you spent a lot of time in St. Moritz. I've never been.
Haven't, unfortunately.
but coming home, I mean, you know, London, obviously where you live and showing the festival, but obviously Glasgow, where you come from.
Yeah.
It must be nice to go back there with a film. I mean, obviously Ratcatcher comes from there, you know.
Yeah. Oh, well, it was great being back because it was a Glasgow Film Theatre as well. It's a kind of the build. I used to go and see the cinema there. You know, I saw some of my favourite movies there when I was like 15, 16.
What are they, Lynn?
Well, I saw Fear Eats the Soul there by Fassbinder. Before I was a filmmaker and didn't really know what to make of some of these things, but, you know, just seeing really interesting work that you can see anywhere else, you know. And it's also a deco theatre. I saw Blue Velvet, I think, there as well. Mm-hmm. But it's still the old wooden, you know, it's a deco style, and, you know, you really feel like you're getting for a cinematic experience, the way the whole room and the way, you know, the screen works and everything. So it was a very warm audience, you know.
Well, I'm not surprised. I mean, a Kevin is you know, a really fine film. It's a great experience of film because it's about colour and sound. It's a sensory experience. And I wanted to ask you about the sort of, you know, Lionel Shriver's novel. It's quite a literary experience. You know, it's epistolary.
Yeah,
it's like liaison
dodge.
So you've translated that literary feel into quite a cinematic feel.
Yeah, that's why it's... I mean, you know, I think people, you know, sometimes think, oh, you can take a bestseller and just translate, but it wasn't like that at all. I mean, I was always going to put my stamp in it right from day one. And so it was a process of kind of ripping it up and finding the real themes of it, you know, and then sort of putting it back together again. And it was a really intricate process. A lot of the work of the film really is done in the script. I mean, the sound design and then, you know, in the editing, there's a lot of that in the script already. It was so tight and money, and it's very complicated making a film in the States where you've got UK finance, and if the dollar gets strong, you know, you're like,
you know,
it was like that the week before we shot. So it was always really hairy, and it was only a 30-day shoot. So I had to really have worked out before. I mean, I probably spent six months.
Where did you shoot it, Lynn? People will see it and they'll try to work out what area of America this is.
I bet a couple of things in, you know, shots, like very little in New York because it was, you know, just at the beginning, and then Connecticut. The book was actually set around the Nyack area, which is the other side. It's like, you know, it's the kind of opposite side of Connecticut. If you go through up, it's like upstate New York, but they're kind of similar. You know, they've got a similar, I mean, very beautiful places, actually quite rich, and then you've got the sort of town centres like Stamford, which are a bit more scuzzy and stuff. So, yeah, it was interesting to see kind of outside New York as well. You know, the landscapes and stuff.
Yeah.
You know? As a filmmaker, and it's also really good when you're a European, you know, you go over to the States and stuff, so your eyes are very fresh. I mean, everyone thinks, oh, Wim Wenders and stuff, you know, Paris, Texas, and I think there's a romanticism in America, but, you know, it's quite corporate in some of those places, lots of malls and, you know, the place where she works in the travel agents, that actually was a real travel agent.
Yeah, there's quite a history, you know, of European directors going to America, and we were talking about it just the other day with Nicholas Winding Refn, who's done Drive, of course, you have a sort of distance view and a romantic view, but also a critical view, and that's all there in Kevin, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, it was surprising for me how, I mean, we found exactly the house. I couldn't have designed a set better. You know, it was, you know, because the houses are, it was very, I mean, I was looking for a kind of something that felt like where she would feel very isolated and also it's really very big and that you couldn't hide, you know, and explore a place that felt, that sort of represented in a way, like also that the family, somewhat of this, you know, the veneer of the family, a facade, you know, something where, you know, everyone's, you know, no one's really been honest and the space kind of reflecting that.
Yeah.
And it looked like a set. It looked like you could push a wall down, you know. It was crazy, you know. But that's great for shooting because, like, you need the space.
Yes, it's really set up and move nicely. Open plan. So that you would recommend to young filmmakers, if you're shooting interiors, go for an open plan house.
Yes, I
would.
Or any American, they're always bigger than the houses here, so it's much easier to shoot in that house because even things like Ratcatcher, that was, you know, they were set in tenements. Some of that was sets and it's double size. You need to shoot it double size to get the angles that you need.
Right,
you
know? And it still feels pretty claustrophobic.
Yeah, and just to get the shots. So it's funny with a set, you think, oh, it'll be, you know, you'd walk in and it'd be a representation. It's not that. And the great thing about the spaces in America, we could utilise them like that.
Yeah.
You know? So even the spaces, but the malls and all that kind of thing. I mean, we walked into the travel agents, it said Inspire, you know, and big, you know, it had a big sign up, you know, and everyone looked so depressed, you know. It was an insurance office, actually. So we took that little Inspire sign and kind of replicated it, a lot of the things that were already there, you know. So,
well, it goes with what your film it is, because your film is sort of counterintuitive. Things shouldn't be as they are. We shouldn't be looking at mums kind of just going, oh no, what am I going to do with this devil child?
So it's
about that flip side of a dream that kind of goes bad.
It's fantasy in a way. It's not reality, you know, realism, you know. It's you know, Kevin's a fantastical character in a way, do you know what I mean? But it's amazing how I was even talking to my sister-in-law last night, actually. And
has she got children?
She's got two children, and she had a really bad experience where her baby would cry the whole time, and she said she felt like throwing the baby, you know, like it was just constant. It went on for months and months and months, you know, and she was very nervous around her child, so she really related to it. It was like really strange her seeing the film, you know?
Yeah,
she was like, oh my god. So I think, you know, I'm hoping it's pretty universal.
Yeah, it's interesting because Lionel Shriver hasn't got children. She's child-free as well, the author of the book.
I mean, I've got a very big family. I don't have kids myself, but I've got a very big Glaswegian family. We've all got kids and, like, you know, I grew up, like, kind of, you know, practically, you know, looking after my niece a lot of the time as well, you know.
But having made Kevin, having studied the novel and your script and seen the film and lived with it so much, has it put you off? I'm not being like Jewish mother, you know, are we going to see it?
Actually, someone in the audience said, oh, this is the best form of contraception.
It is.
I mean, I think it was ideas, I think it's it was a set of questions, you know, and a set of ideas, and that she presented, you know, in an extreme one, you know. But and I think you do have all those thoughts, and especially older mothers. I mean, there was some. I mean, some of the things I was laughing at in the book were she's, you know, quite vain about her body change and her, you know. So, and I think these are kind of thoughts that you have that you don't really tell anyone, you know.
No, but, absolutely, you know.
Yeah, so but every mother does have that fear, like, oh, what if this doesn't turn out the way I want it? You know, I mean, it might not be. You know, you don't know what you're going to get, you know, and they don't know what they're going to get either.
Well, it's true. It's like making a film. You never know what's going to come out in the end.
Exactly. I'd feel like, you know, it's still something. I mean, it's really hard when you're a director because you're always, you know, so it wouldn't be one of those babies that was in a backpack. Yeah, exactly. Kind of on a set, you know, all the time. and I think that when you're, you know, any director, I think it's then their partner's got a lot of weight on them. You know, yeah. You're always moving around.
It's,
you know,
true. So. Talking of Scotland and children and careers, your lead actress is Tilda Swinton, of course. Yeah, it won't go unnoticed. And people are saying awards for her, please. And you know, I wouldn't begrudge her anything from must have been a very tough performance. How closely did you work with her? Was she always your main character? And did you discuss the part with her? Because, you know, I can imagine several actresses going, it's a great challenge, but maybe some of them would shy away from it. Exactly, balking it.
Yeah. Well, we just talked. I mean, I think she'd read the novel, but we were friends anyway, you know. And we were just talking, you know, along the line. She was asking what you're doing, and she's always said, I'd like to work with you. And you know, it was one of those, let's find the right thing at some point. But more than that, she's a great person, you know. And so, I guess we were talking about it, and I wasn't really thinking, oh, it's you or anything like that. And maybe there was a sort of, for me, I thought, because she's really beautiful, she's so exotic, you know, it's Orlando, the White Witch, you know. And then I thought, God, actually, Tilda Swinton in a completely different role, you know, where she's much more beaten down and kind of normal mother, like, for one, you know, in an extreme situation, like, and it's an abnormal one as well. Yeah. And I thought her physicality, the fact that she was like 6 foot tall as well, and you know, she's living in the same place, and she, almost as a punishment that people know who she is, and you know,
yeah, she sticks out, doesn't she? And she also has to come down so low to speak to her kid,
you exactly. Know, you know, and so the size and that aspect, actually, you can't really hide if you look like Tilda Swinton either, yeah. You know? And so, you know, those dark glasses we put on her and all that stuff were for a reason, and she used her body really well, and so did Ezra, because, you know, in a sort of, he's got this kind of creepy slinkiness, and he's getting,
the kid who plays, Kevin.
It just kind of went from there, and she was like the first person I sent it to, but she came back in about an hour and a half. She must have read it right away.
Yeah.
Said, let's go for lunch. She said, I'll audition, I'll do anything. I was like, don't be stupid, I don't want you to audition. I know what she can do, you know what I mean? She's amazing. So it was a lot of talking about it beforehand. I mean, I spent some time up in there and we hung out a bit, but more just getting to know each other and, you know, better and, like, you know, in terms of just where we were going to go with this thing and stuff. So she's a bit like Samantha Morton in the sense that I don't think she's not overly analytical. We talked a lot, but when we go into a performance, it's like we all knew what we were doing. Mm. We didn't do loads of rehearsals. And that was the same with John C. Reilly and Ezra, because I'd spent months with Ezra, you know, in the casting. So, and John's just as solid as a rock, so, you know, and really wanted to work with me. So it was really, I had to get quite reliable people as well, because I didn't have a lot of time, only 30 days.
Yeah, but, people who can turn up and do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple of boys that were interesting, but you knew they had problems, you know, like, and you, I just didn't have the time, you know. It was looking for a really, really solid set of people, and you know, I can't imagine anyone else in it now.
Well, that's the thing. I was just exactly about to say that. It's one of those roles that I thought, well, who could do this? I've never seen, when even reading the book, I was like, I don't really see this woman. And now I've seen Tilda, I just can't imagine anyone else doing it.
And I'm so, for me, that she just inhabits the role. And I think, of course, when these things about people do the usual suspects, you know, Laura Linney, Kate Blanchett, you know, but there's like a lot of characters, Julianne Moore, you know, they're great. Mm. They're all brilliant character and actresses. But something about her is really chameleon-like, and the fact that she doesn't have this big status, I think it didn't put a barrier up. I mean, she does. I mean, she's Tilda Swinton, an icon, but somehow we could change her enough to be Eva completely, you know. And she went into that, and I think there's something that great thing about, because she isn't a Hollywood actress, you know, and she's able to move from here to Europe and different things, and she's picked really amazing projects and directors to work with. I mean, she's got that. She looks so different in every film.
Yeah, it was almost like she's given you the, you know, she's worked with Derek Jarman a lot.
Yeah,
so she's
kind of like having a piece of clay to, you can, you know, mold. Yeah, yeah. She's like, you know, you can throw colour on here. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you certainly do that in the film. There's a palette, a right palette of colours in that film. And there people literally throw colour at her. You know? So you've done that. So does this mean now, just before we let you go back to bed or wherever it is you're going in Glasgow?
I'll meet my mum for lunch.
Oh, good. Oh, right. Well, send her my love.
I will.
Does this mean now, after the 9 years gap, and I know you were working on Peace at Peter Jackson's stuff, and everyone knows that story. Does this mean now that you're back? We're going to see another one from you. Hurry up.
Yeah, I mean, because in that gap, I mean, a lot of, I mean, some of that, I mean, Lovely Bones, I don't want to talk about, but it's like it took, about, you know, I was involved in that for about 4 years, and then I had a few personal tragedies, that was really tough, and then I've been writing Kevin for a while, because it's not just a translation script. I'm not like, you could have done, you know, if you'd done a translation, literal translation for the book, it would have been a 25-hour long film, very verbose, lots of voiceover. So actually, it was one of the most difficult scripts I've ever written. It was like a jigsaw puzzle. It took intricate work, and to get it to the state it was in, it was only 87 pages, so lean beforehand. That was like writing a novel in itself.
Yeah, well, you have rewritten it.
Yeah, it was like smashing something. It was like starting again. So that sometimes things just take that amount of time, especially if they're non-linear and complex like this. And I think so it's the nature of the project. If you're doing a run-and-gun linear project, it doesn't take that, you know, it won't take as long as Kevin would. So I've got lots. I've written other things, and there's a smaller thing in Glasgow next year, which is funny and a black humour and a kind of...
So you're sticking to your guns there, because you know Hollywood's going to start offering you. You'll get thousands of scripts about mothers, single mothers and naughty children.
Yeah, well, that's what happens. You get labelled. I mean, when I did Ratcatcher, it was all the, like, you know, people got, you know, send you things about poor kids and stuff. And I'm like, no,
and rodents.
I don't want to do that. You know, I've done it. But there's another, I've got a bigger project as well that I'm really excited about, that's science fiction, you know, and that's something that, you know, and a couple other things in the boil. And next week I'm meant to be shooting a short about wild swimming for the Olympics.
Oh, yeah, you're part of the Olympics. Mike Lee and there's you, yeah.
Yeah, the only thing is the Blinking Water's getting very, very cold, so that'll be a laugh.
Go to Ibiza or somewhere.
Yeah,
somewhere
I think
nice.
I know, yes, I'm getting a bit concerned I'm going to kill the poor wild swimmer, you know. By, you know, hypothermia, don't you know?
Yeah, slather him in, you know, Vaseline or whale fat.
Yeah, I think he'll need to get some duck fat.
He's not a potato, he's a swimmer.
I know. Well, actually, it's really wonderful. I've met a lot of these wild swimmers, and they look very, because they swim alone, a lot of them, you know, down rivers and stuff. And
yeah.
They're very hardy, and they look like very zen and touched, you know, so I think these guys are pretty crazy, they'll go for anything.
So you're not going with David Walliams?
I thought about it, actually, but I think he's a bit ill, you know.
Well, he's been swimming in the Thames, though, wasn't he?
I know, I don't think he's... Maybe, you know, yeah, he's a brave man.
Yeah, he is.
I thought about... I mean, I swam a lot for a year myself, but that's, you know, for him to do the channel and stuff, it's incredible. But it's a very meditative thing. It's, you know, I'm a bit of a fan of swimming.
Well,
know?
I never knew, Lynn.
I got into free diving for a little while. I'm not very good, but it just is beautiful, you know.
What, diving for pearls down in the...
Yeah, you know. Yeah, like free diving, basically. You know, you don't have the mask.
How far can you go?
Oh, I'm not that good. I mean, like, my friend, she taught me, she's Italian, she can go proper deep, you know. I can go to 4 or 5 metres, and you know, and that seems like it's not a lot, but it feels like a lot when you sit at the bottom.
Deeper than my watch says it can go, but I've never tested it.
So I don't really know. I mean, I was going quite, I went to Croatia and I was going quite deep, but I was like, it was quite cold water, and you're not meant to go on your own, so I think I was getting a bit stupid, actually, because you see shells at the bottom, and you're like, oh.
Shiny, sparkly.
Yeah, but it's a beautiful thing, and it really, it's been great for the writing, because I wrote a lot of the script with my husband in Stromboli in Italy. It's a volcano.
Oh, I went there on my honeymoon.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I went to Genosha, and that's a part that doesn't have any cars.
God, that is bleak. Well, not bleak. It's kind of, you know, remote, let's call
it's
it.
Well, it's a great place to write. You don't have any email. You don't have any. You have to go to one place in that the island or a hotspot if you want to get an email connection, and it's a nightmare. No phone. There was water from the wells, wind plug, solar power, you know. It was like really going off piece, you know. And the volcano exploding outside the window.
It's a perfect setting for the film, case, I must admit.
So I think it was really, you know, that it was a really good place to focus and concentrate and do all that sort of swimming and diving and stuff like that. It was a good way to just kind of like get, you know, clear your mind for the next day's work.
Well, I'm glad you've picked up the Aeolian Islands, but you'll go back there to write your next trip. It'll be full of aspirant writers.
I actually don't want to tell anyone about it, so, you know, so it doesn't become, you know, too well known because a few writers went there. So I won't, maybe don't mention the exact place.
Yeah, exactly. Because you want to rent that villa again.
Yeah, well, it's just that place. House, it's a very special place. And, and I don't think there's that many places like that left in Europe.
No, certainly not. So certainly
in
not.
Fact, they shot La Ventura not very far out. I actually got them, had this mad ride to another island where, very Italian style, this guy in a helicopter turns up and says, oh, you guys want a ride, you know, to another island? Okay, you know, and we flew right over the island that Antonioni shot at La Ventura, and it's amazing. So.
Yeah, really beautiful island as well, yeah. Great film as well.
Yeah, I love that film. It's wonderful. Yeah.
Let's go watch that tonight.
Yeah.
All right. So you have lunch with your mum, and then we'll go and watch La Ventura. Brilliant, Lynn Ramsey. I'm going to let you go before you spill any more secret locations.
I know my fella gets about that. I know it's actually the person that introduced me said, "Don't tell anybody about this."
Yeah, I know. I must say that we need to talk about Kevin. Much as I like it, it's not likely to inspire a great tourist industry around the kind of blasted malls of Connecticut, at least.
That's true.
Lynn, congratulations on being back. Can't wait to see more of your work again.
Thank you, Jason.
And love to speak to you on Film Weekly.
It's been a pleasure, thank you. And I'll see you soon, I hope.
Oh, me too.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.